My name is William Del Pilar, the conservative Latino, and I'm with
Big Fat John at your service.
I never say Big Fat John. I like the term girthy.
Girthy. I don't know why. It makes me uncomfortable.
That's why I like it.
It gives me douche. Okay, fair enough. Look, I'm down with that. If your goal is to make me feel uncomfortable, then yes, that is the proper. That is the proper phrase.
I have no shame. In fact, a good friend of mine, or my parents' friends, Special Forces guy, this guy has some hell of a war stories that he told me. Well, he's passed, but, you know, he's a super macho. And I would do that joke, and he didn't like it. Now he's older, and I'm a man now, so we look at it equal. So I gave him the hug. I love the old guy. And I grabbed his ass.
Never
seen a man freak out and jump as high as I have.
Oh, my God. He must have thought you were a Mo.
Well, the whole point was I just knew how uncomfortable. I'm not going to say he's homophobic.
I'll say it. Maybe he was homophobic. I don't know.
Well, I would hope not, considering things I know about the family. And he knew too. But, I mean, nothing bad, just, you know.
I know what you mean. Okay, I got you.
But because he was a great man. He is one of those great unsung heroes that served this country, Panamanian. He lived for the Army. It's probably where I get some of my patriotism from. I mean, and we won't go into it. We got a show to do, but
sure.
As so much history in a different country, you just look at this country differently. But let's get to
it. Absolutely.
Tonight, Dwayne Haskins, rest in peace. Mm. Brittany Griner, still locked up. Cam Newton, can you just shut the bleep up?
Mm.
And Big John remembers Gilbert Gottfried.
R.I.P. Gilbert.
And let's just jump right on into it there, Big John.
Sure.
Dwayne Haskins. There's been a lot said about Mr. Haskins. He's become very controversial. In fact, I would dare say that he is the biggest football controversy we've had since Colin Kaepernick. Obviously not at the same level, but this is kind of blown up. First of all, let's give a hat tip to Ms. Sydney Henderson of USA Today. With the story, NFL quarterback Dwayne Haskins hit and killed by dump truck. Here's what we know. And I want to pass it off to you, John.
Sure.
Tell us a little about how he died, and then I want to talk about his history.
Yeah, so first of all, a tragedy, no matter how you look at it. Young man, 24 years old. He would have been 25 shortly. When the reports first broke, William, all we knew was he had been killed while walking on the interstate.
Interstate. I didn't know about New York, but the interstate's out here, 4 wide, and there's never not a car crossing that spot.
Exactly. That's what makes it so weird, right? And even more so at first I said, well, maybe he was walking on the shoulder and someone got hit. You know, like sometimes people get hit when their car breaks down when they're on the shoulder and they're not careful. But this one said, no, he got hit crossing the interstate, which was, again, very – why, right? And it was right after a practice, I think. A teammate, Chase Claypool, said he was the last one to talk to him.
He was down there doing work with Mitch Trubisky and I forget who else, but some Steelers were down there, you know, off-season work, I think on their own.
Yeah. And so struck and killed. And obviously a tragedy, super tragedy. There was some mystery surrounding it. But then, you know, as things come out, there may have been some other people involved. We don't know, by the way, it's not been, I don't think, confirmed, William, whether or not there was another driver that he was trying to help or not help.
The driver who may have been inebriated.
Yes, drunk. There's a lot of uncertainties here. But at the end of the day, the final sad fact, tragic fact is that a young man lost his life probably needlessly.
I don't think there's probably. He lost it needlessly.
Needlessly, you're right. My bad. he did lose his life needlessly. I mean, there was no reason for it. But as usual, William, it's not just what happened, but what happened after it happened, right?
Right. And before we do that, I'd like to set it up so people know who Dwayne Haskins is. And You're right. It's always a tragedy, and we'll talk about it here. Clay Travis of Outkick made a couple of great comments on how we look at that situation, depending on where in life we are. But I want to set it up with his college and his pros, because when I researched this, I was like, whoa, extreme from both ends in terms of greatness to failure. And on the side of failure, that story was yet to be finished. So it's not like he would have ended up that way.
Right.
So I set us up with that in terms of what about college? Ohio State, right?
Ohio State, he had a great one season, basically, as a junior. Just an incredible season, 50 touchdowns, rocket arm, very athletic on the field.
He could make you throw from anywhere.
Yeah, he literally was Justin Fields before Justin Fields, you know. So had a bright future. There were some questions whether he needed another year as a starter because he only played the one season, essentially.
Right, right.
So it was one of those situations, well, did he show enough talent to justify him going to the NFL a year early? As is usually the case in these situations, the kid chose to go for the money and say, I'm coming out early, right? Because everyone projected him to be a number one pick. As a matter of fact, most people had him going to my Giants that season.
It would have been a role reversal. Because we'll get into that in a bit.
Yeah, like initially a lot of mock experts had him going to the Giants, and the Giants pulled a fast one by using their number six pick on Daniel Jones. Haskins fell to the Redskins. And at the time, a lot of people said that was a huge mistake on the Giants' part, that they should have taken Haskins, that he was the better athletic quarterback. Maybe that would have been true in a different environment. Certainly, Daniel Jones is no great shakes. So Haskins went to the Redskins, really had a rocky start. And you might say to yourself, well, he's a rookie. Seven TDs, seven interceptions, kind of looked lost at times. But that wasn't the disturbing part when you're playing for Ron Rivera. The disturbing part was the reports coming out that he wasn't necessarily a good teammate. He wasn't focused. He didn't put in the hard work at practice. He wasn't necessarily the most studious player, especially for a quarterback.
Well, he didn't have issues with his teammates as much as they couldn't understand him. So, I mean, in terms of the habits he was
they
all talked well. And in fact, that was one of the confusing issues about him. Everybody, you kind of like him. He's personable.
Oh, no. He was very personable. Again, maybe I misspoke. By being a good teammate, I mean not doing the work necessary to elevate the team. In terms of a person, I don't think anyone said, oh, man, I can't stand him. I think it was more the case of, man, he let us down again. You know, he just didn't come through again, you know, that sort of thing.
They said it like that. He probably had his detractors who saw the same thing. I mean, you're talking Rivera, but if I remember correctly, Jay Gruden put him in the game. That's what it was. Jay Gruden wanted Daniel Jones, who the Giants snagged. But he's a local kid. You know, and at the end of the day, they're like, hey, we draft a local kid. We're going to be able to have more sales. And Haskins was a local product there.
And let's face it.
He was overruled.
And he had the hype.
Yeah, exactly.
Daniel Jones did not have the hype.
Yeah, exactly. Snyder overruled him, though. And it didn't matter because Jones did not fodder them anyway.
Them anyway, right.
So they got him. But, you know, I just got him more fiercer with this belief, John. Don't throw your projects into the fire.
Yes.
And what I mean by that are these small school kids. It's like Malik Willis. It's like, dude, he did not have as great a year as I assumed he would coming out. No wonder they're saying he's a weak class. But if he's this talented, then do not – I mean, what I'm saying is let him drop where he belongs. It's not – I mean, that's not dictated by you or us. But my point is they just want to throw these young kids out. And my point being is – Haskins was, he needed 14 games total he played in college.
Yeah, right.
So he look at Daniel Jones. He's got one more year, and granted, no one can dispute the fact those were some pretty horrific teams and some bad leadership on the Giants the last few years.
Yes.
So he can give it a little bit of a mulligan, and this is do or die. Haskins didn't even have that long. He had two seasons.
Yeah.
And that was it.
What, not even two full seasons. And it was Rivera that cut him, though, right?
Right, Rivera. Well, he lost them the game that, had they won, would have won them the division.
The division. And so I think it was that lack, for general terms, it was a lack of a work ethic. And it looked like his career might be over, but then he caught on with the Steelers. He was the backup to Roethlisberger last year. And this year, he was going to be in a quarterback competition with Mitch Trubisky.
Trubisky.
We're assuming that the Steelers wouldn't have drafted like a Kenny Pickett or somebody.
Right.
But the assumption going in was that he would at least try to compete for the starting job this year.
Well, he was pretty, remorseful, but he was pretty adamant, it seemed, about coming back and like realizing, you know, I need to improve myself a bit here.
Yeah.
And maybe he was starting to develop that self-confidence.
And again, only 24. Like, that's the other thing that, generally speaking, we look at football players, and I'm guilty of this too, that – at 21, we kind of expect that they're grown men already, you know, that they have the maturity of grown men. It's very rare that they do. Like, when you look at a Peyton Manning coming out or somebody like that who like, had that not just football maturity, but just maturity, right, that other people
Manning rather did. Yeah, but that's a rarity.
It's extremely rare. Most of the time, you end up with divas.
That's because John and an agent and former players have told me this, that once your skill is discovered –
oh, yeah.
No one ever says no to you.
Exactly. They kiss your butt constantly.
And once the game ends, lives come crashing down emotionally, mentally. And now the way CTE, the way science is starting to diagnose CTE, it's like, God, there's a massive – I mean, they're getting multimillions. God bless them. I don't care. But then you kind of have to weigh, am I going to live long enough to really enjoy all this?
Well, yes, that's a great point. And also, here's the other point most people don't think of. The human brain is still developing till roughly the age of 25, 26.
Right. The human body, too, right around 26, 27, 28. People don't realize that type of stuff.
And but more importantly, the brain. So when you start to think about these kids being immature – especially at the beginning of their career, their brains are still developing. I know it sounds almost like you should be talking about babies in that manner, but it's also been one of my sticking points in general about why is the age of consent almost universally 18?
Like, they assume your development.
Yeah.
Maybe back 200 years ago it was.
Well, it was I think it's because the physical development is outpacing the mental development at that point.
You know, you're not the first to have mentioned that. I think I saw that on the Sci-Fi Channel. I'm kidding. Okay.
I'm laughing.
Okay, so let's get to it here in terms of the controversy.
Yes.
I'll let you handle it, but my take is you and I grew up in an era where somebody passed. Our parents didn't even tell us. We kind of knew. Shut the bleep up and don't say anything that you're thinking of, because you're going to say something bad or stupid. You know, and the man is dead. That's how we grew up. You kept your trap shut, period. And I'll be the first to say social media has changed that for the younger generations. But even for people in our generation, I'll haul off and say stuff sometimes now, because it's kind of like it built up in me so much. I'm like, bleep you. And so it's a very it's a situation where people, I think, are just really out there mentally when they're on social media.
Yeah, there is something to be said about that. First of all, there's definitely a generational distinction in that regard, in the sense that people of our generation, and I'll take it even a bit further, people of our generation who may perhaps have grown up in a city like New York, where people are notoriously, especially for my generation, sarcasm was a way of life, insults were a way of life, four-letter words flow freely, you know what I mean?
Oh, I think that that's not just New York City, that's how our group was. I think we were the last generation.
Right. And so you take us, and then maybe you take someone like me who's so much a free speech advocate, and you put me in front of people who want to monitor everything I say. My first reaction is not just to be against that. It's to go entirely in the opposite direction. So people who knew me during my Wall Street days don't recognize me now. Because on Wall Street, I was the picture of professionalism. Always wearing a nice Brooks Brothers suit. Never used any foul language. Always used the high vocabulary. Made it a point, no matter who yelled at me, I would stay calm and speak in my nice radio voice and just calm them down. Now, I can't wait to unleash a barrage of four-letter words and curses and screams at anybody who crosses me or tries to tell me what to say.
In your defense, the pushback on that, I don't think I've ever heard you go crazy with the cursing, but I've seen that fierceness in some of those posts.
Yeah, yeah.
The point I'm like, dude.
Yeah.
But anyway, though.
William is always reeling me in, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. Like, much like my program director at Sirius when I had my show, where every Monday after my weekend show, William, I got that call. We need to talk about what you said. For a year, I got that, okay?
Tell us what Adam Schefter said.
You're right. Adam Schefter, in reporting the breaking news, now remember, breaking news of Haskins' tragic death, tweeted out, he said Dwayne Haskins was struck and killed, quote, comma, struggled to catch on with Washington and Pittsburgh in the NFL. He was 24. He would have been 25.
Right,
now,
right.
I don't view that as offensive. Maybe slightly out of taste, slightly, because he's mixing in football with the tragic, breaking the tragic news of his death. So I view it as maybe it could have been worded better, but I didn't see anything inappropriate, and I didn't see anything that would certainly have merited the avalanche of pushback and outrage that Schefter received. So Schefter is the one response people reacted to that I don't understand. Like, just don't read his tweet.
That's just it. That's my whole point. In fact, I have it. In essence, people are holier than thou behind their computer.
Yes.
I mean, there's probably a rapist there, you know, condemning Schefter because he lacks taste, you know? And I'm being semi-serious. It's people who just put themselves on a pedestal. And so here was and we also live in this odd world, you know? So these people are empowered and they have the power to back it up in terms of nothing that they happen to them or any consequences. So they go worse, worse, and worse. So they just attack him as if he's the greatest sin that have ever evolved, you know? So
it was just
over the top.
It was exactly. It was so, like, look, you could have just said, like, if, like, in my typical, like, if I were to reply to Schefter at that point, I would have said something like, dude, really? Did you?
Well,
need
see,
to
that's
mention?
The only type of response. I mean, it's that minor to where, like, you need to mention it. Like, come on, man.
Yeah, but exactly. That's the way I viewed it. Yes.
You know, and Travis Clay actually said it best. Is, you know, what he was trying to do was do a little Twitter limited obituary in terms of encompassing what his football career was and the fact he passed. And that's where you're like, dude, this isn't an obituary. It's Twitter. It doesn't work. You know?
Yeah. And there's something to be said about the expected professionalism of a professional writer.
Yeah.
News writer, journalist. So if you and I got on Twitter and we had tweeted that, nobody holds us to that standard, I would hope.
Oh, no. And again, according to what I say, the people who have those standards have said 10 things, 10 to 0.
Yes.
They're the ones yelling at you.
Yeah. But anyway, so that was the first tweet where that got horrible pushback. The second one was actually by Gil Brandt, 90 years old, I think, right now, William, former Cowboys executive.
John, I know Gil Brandt. I mean, he probably wouldn't remember me, but in my time, I always ran into him. We talk. And
yeah.
In fact, the lesson that I learned about Gil Brandt, never give him your mobile. At the time, they called it cell phones. You know? Yes. Never give him your cell phone. I mean, they still got cell phones, but that was it. But anyway.
I mean, don't give him your number or don't give him
no,
your phone?
No, don't give him the cell phone. Hey, can I borrow your phone? And I'm out thinking.
Oh, I got you.
Next thing I know, I'm like, where's Gil at? 20 minutes later, that bastard had made that damn long distance call. And I had been warned that's what he does. And then does he have a cell? And in fact, it was an insider from the Philly area. Well, he's an insider now, but we came up together. He's the one who warned me of it. But anyway, so you're right. He's a 90-year-old man. And
former Cowboys
executive. Is your parents and my dad. My parents' generation, and that's old school. They kind of say it, and he comes from that old school mentality. He says it how not necessarily for effect or anything. He just says it because that's what he knows of the person.
And at 90, really, who cares at that point? If you're 90, say whatever you want. But here's what he said.
Exactly.
Here's the one that I think he did too. He doubled down, and this is the one he doubled down on. He said, they told him, meaning Haskins, don't under any circumstances leave school early. You just don't have the work habits. You don't have this. You don't have that. But what did he do? Left school early. Anytime anybody dies, it's tragic, especially when you're 24 years old and you've got your whole life ahead of you. Maybe if he stayed in school a year, he wouldn't do silly things. Now, this one I find totally, like, no need to write this.
Oh, right.
I find this to be not even what Schefter did, which was stating a fact. Like, he struggled with the Redskins, and he hoped to continue his career in Pittsburgh. Those are facts, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This stuff is opinion mixed in with fact. And
it's actually, in his eyes, all fact, because that's what he saw. Remember, people forget he was a scout. And he was still consulting. I don't know if he was consulting a couple years ago, but he's still in that world. So for him to not really have an opinion, I'm not defending him. I agree with you.
Yeah.
But my point is, when you saw that, were you offended? Or like, what the fuck?
Was I offended? No.
Okay. And that's my point. People of the morality, they're offended. There's a certain power to how you're offended versus, kind of bug me. It's like if you're offended, it's deep. It affected me, you know? It's how much is that, Mr. Therapist? You know, I need to cut you that check for.
Well,
that's what you get when they, and that's how they're saying it, and that's how they're using it. And that's what I find offensive.
Well, listen. When someone – it used to be, at least for us growing up, the word offense, I took offense. You're right. That means it was a personalized insult.
Yeah. For example, that's what our moms used to give us.
Exactly. Way. In other words, I'm very difficult to offend through social media, right? I have – and by the way, I'm not claiming to be a comic, but I think I have a comic's mentality in that you could say almost anything to me. And especially if I get the impression that it was meant in the context of a joke or a snide comment, I might reply to it. I might go back and forth. But I don't get offended. I don't ask that anybody be blocked. I don't ask that that people lose their jobs or anything like that. Like, look, last week we talked about Louis C.K. and one of the comedians that's mentioned as complaining against him had a tweet. Jen Kirkman had a tweet. I quote tweeted her and put the word accusers in quotes, right? Meaning like, because my position is Louis didn't really do anything wrong, right? She blocked me. She didn't even, and by the way, the thing that I find astonishing is she's a stand-up comedian.
So I know, but you know what though, John? You probably are one and you can count on two hands how many people would think Louis did nothing wrong. Yeah.
No, but my point is, for someone whose living is dependent on the ability to go up and say what you want without people shutting you down. To take offense like that on a non-personalized level is astonishing to me. So,
you know,
Gil Grant should, I'm sorry, one last thing. Maybe people should be outraged at what he said, but not take offense at what he said. So, for example, tell him like, oh, crap, you should have, what's he saying? Okay. What's he doing? You know, like,
no. Okay, here's a little, no pushback, but here's another angle.
Yeah.
Because I researched this story, and I think you figured out I do research in depth. What Gil Brandt said was true. And I'm not saying this to hurt Hastings. What I'm saying is, people are trying to say, well, he's a – don't put a 90-year-old man out there. Well, one, Gilbrand, even when I knew him back then, he was extremely sharp. But that means nothing because, you know, years have passed. However, if the NFL still has him on, and he's not just on one show. He does a lot of pop-ins, pop-outs. He must still have it together at 90, and some people do. So, I mean, look at Trump. Look at Biden. You know, whatever you may think of one of them, one can be coherent, the other can't anymore. You know, so my point is, I don't question him being 90 as much as what was Gil Brandt commenting on. So, for example, was he on and Clay Travis again pulled this? He just got my mind thinking because it's so common sense.
Right.
But why would you have a 90-year-old guy on there? Now, he knows inside and out, but probably no better than anybody else at the NFL Network or radio, you know, that type.
Right.
So couldn't they have found a former teammate, somebody he went with? I mean, it just seems like he's not the one who should have been there. At 90, it's like, come on, Gil, we're going to put you as a consultant now. You know? I don't know. Maybe I'm being a little mean here and I shouldn't be. But my point is when I did research it, what he said was correct. And the reason I say that is, this kid had everything in talent, you know, but it's like he's a grown man, should take responsibility. But the truth of the matter is a lot of his downfall is only 14 games. The adults weren't able to convince him. And then once he got to Washington, he had the world against him. He had a coaching staff that did not want him,
right?
Because he was forced on him by ownership, overruled him. You know, so he didn't take the proper step to learn. But I don't think Jay Gruden's staff. It just seems to me that everything went bad and the team was partly to blame. I guess I look at it like this: it's a Dan Snyder team. When's the last time Dan Snyder ran when's the last time Washington has done anything?
I don't disagree with you. He did face adversity. He didn't handle it well. And look, he fell into the trap that a lot of really talented athletes fall into. They think their athleticism can overcome everything.
Right. That's what some suspect.
Right? Like, hey, I've got a rocket arm. Who cares if I throw it into triple coverage? But what's the one thing every rookie says as soon as they hit the NFL? Man, this game is a lot faster than it was in college.
Yeah.
And listen, just on a very, you know, like when I played football in high school, going from junior to senior, you were like, wait, how did these guys get so – I've never seen anybody this fast in my life. I mean, when I played special teams my first kickoff against seniors, and I went to hit somebody, and by the time my arms moved from my chest out 6 inches – the guy had juked me and was by me, you know, it was like, and I was like, who the hell is so, I was so unprepared for it. I can only imagine the difference of playing, say, in a small college. Now, he played at Ohio State, but, and then jumping up where even the worst corner on the other team was the best in college at some point, right?
But the thing is, they say that in the pros, there are no bad players, you know.
Yeah, the worst player in the pros is still good. So, yeah,
but anyway, so let's leave it like this because you know there was actually a racial component put by a writer, which made no sense. But that said, in honor of Hastings, this isn't the time for that. It's about understanding we did lose someone who seemed to have realized. Like we said earlier, a report came in that talking about there's not enough information yet, but saying that a drunk woman may have been with him in the car. And but your take where the maturity level and the growth and things, and you're saying that it's across the board for those athletes of every race, color, or creed, you know, because there's nothing that's going to discriminate about how hard you get hit on that field when you got the football involved in the play.
Yeah, but the racial angle on this befuddled me, I'll be honest.
Oh, me
I
too.
I saw some of those.
No, actually, I'm lying. It did not befuddle me because this is what I have come to expect. Everything. You know it, I know it. It's a multi-billion-dollar industry, the race.
Racial conflict is a multi-billion-dollar industry. You're absolutely right.
But let's leave it like this. A life taken too soon, young man. I don't know who he was as a man off the field, and I never met him on the field. But all I know is what was reported. And I look at it from this perspective. He was working his way back up. And he left it in a positive light versus, what he had to deal with earlier.
Yeah, and I would say that to everyone out there. Like, at the end of the day, if you're a Redskins fan and feel he disappointed you, he's still a 24-year-old kid. Think of yourself at 24 if you're older.
Dude, when I was 24, I could sling it. Boy, I was one of the better players on John Madden. Okay. Brittany Griner. Still in Russia for allegedly breaking the law.
Yep.
And the WNBA is now gender hustling. I'll rehash some of this so people remember who she is. We did talk about her once. But in essence, she plays for the Phoenix Mercury. She's a stud basketball player. In basketball circles, she's extremely well-known, probably the same as the star player in the badminton circles is well-known in the badminton industry. But outside those industries, not very well-known. I'm saying that sarcastically because part of the storyline deals with a conspiracy theory. Who'd ever think a conservative guy would be accusing the leftists of a conspiracy theory, you know? But, you know, she's a stud. She's well-known in WNBA circles in terms of being a star, Olympic gold medalist. So what happened? John, you want to say this is down your road, Mr. Libertarian?
Look, basically she was playing in Russia because she was earning a lot of money in Russia. She was a star player for the Russian league she was in, right?
Right, but John, I think she was actually earning maybe 2 to 3 times more in Russia than she was in the States.
Yeah.
Now, that's an important point to remember.
Definitely. She was earning great money in Russia, and that's why she was there. She had an opportunity to earn a lot more money. So she got stopped at the airport with CBD.
Cannabis.
Which, listen, we don't need to go into the chemistry. The point is, it was a banned substance. It was foolish for her to have it trying to cross an authoritarian government.
Right. The only thing to mention on that is it's not CBD in the sense CBD doesn't give you that high.
Right. But the point is, it's banned. So
right.
She should have known better. But anyway.
That's alleged.
Yes.
I'm trying to take my girl down yet.
that's what the Russians are holding her on.
Yeah.
So basically, and this was when Putin, before he invaded Ukraine, I believe, but as he was gearing up, so there was international pressure and stuff. So basically, she became a propaganda piece almost, right?
But that's what you're alleging. I'm poking fun. It makes sense, but we really don't know yet, do we?
Yeah. So she's still in jail, basically. There's been almost no movement. But what's interesting here is that somehow, to your point, William, the WNBA is taking this opportunity to, I believe the phrase you used was gender hustle.
Gender hustling.
Which again.
Sounds like a song. The hustle.
Yeah.
Gender hustling.
Do the gender hustle. I wish I could
exactly.
Answer.
Exactly.
But basically, you taking the opportunity to push forth the mythology of a gender wage gap. And,
well, okay, before you get into that, because it's about money.
Yeah.
She's at the top of her game. So let's do her some justice, because I kind of just said she's a stud. And I shouldn't have said that. I don't know what the female version of stud is in terms of how to say that. But anyway.
I don't think it makes a difference. She's not the wife in her relationship.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. With that, there's a libertarian take, people. With the number one, she was the number one overall pick in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
She's averaged 20.5 points and 9.5 rebounds per game this past season. She led the Mercury to the WNBA championship in 2014. She's a two-time WNBA Defensive Player of the Year, three-time Russian National League champion. I don't hear them calling her a Putin supporter. And four-time EuroLeague champion who won two Olympic gold medals. So obviously, financially, she is – if not the top female player in the world basketball, then close to it.
But not
so what does that mean money-wise?
Yeah, just not even financially. I mean, just as a player, she might be the best player in the world in women's basketball. So yeah, there's no doubting her credentials and her accomplishments as a basketball player at all. I wouldn't think.
Right. Now, if I remember correctly, she was earning like 5 to 8 times more money in Russia.
Yeah.
So when you hear that, well, and gender hustling is being raised, gender pay difference. What about the men?
Look, the lesser tier players, the ones who
I wouldn't say lesser tier.
Well, let's just say the ones who aren't like the LeBrons, who aren't like the Joel Embiids, who are not Steph Currys.
Yeah.
They typically.
And that's a very high. That's like the elite.
We're talking about the elite. Yeah. Let's say the guys who are typically like, say, the top five or six, or even seven, perhaps.
Just on the elite NBA. Players don't go over. Is right. What you're saying, right.
Some people have to go to Europe or to South America or Central America to play basketball because they pay better there. Some have gone to China to play, right?
Well, it's not for the men. It's not that they pay better. I think it's they earn more over there. They're valued more.
Well, yeah, let me rephrase that. The opportunity to earn more between salary, endorsements, and everything, because let's face it, Americans are viewed as the best basketball players in the world.
Exactly.
Generally speaking. Mm-hmm. So if you're like on a Greek team or an Italian team or an Argentinian team, and all of a sudden you're getting here's a perfect example I remember from my youth. Walter Berry, if you remember him, he used to play for St. John's here in New York, played with Chris Mullins.
Yeah, that's right. Chris Mullins, that whole crew. They lost in the finals, I think. Didn't they?
Right. They always used to go up against Georgetown classic battles. But anyway, Walter Berry was a great collegiate player, never really made it in the NBA. He made a ton of money in Europe because he was a star in Europe. Yeah. Like here, he was very average. In Europe, he was a star. And the fans over there loved Walter Berry. And there's guys like that there now, right?
Exactly.
So men have to go through it. It's just that men are perceived as stealing money from women somehow because of this ridiculous gender gap myth.
Hold on. Let's realize he's talking about the WNBA here in the States. In terms of...
Overseas... I would still wager that the men's game probably pays better for one
sport. Oh, right. I mean, I wouldn't argue, but they're never going to make a case in a country.
Right.
We're like one of the few countries, if the only country, a case like this can be made, you know?
Yeah, because listen, in this country, and it all comes back to a lack of economic knowledge among the people, right? They don't know how economics works. You and I, being small business owners, being people who have tried to build a business and make your payroll and everything, we know one thing. William, if you and I write an article that you give it a year and nobody's reading it, are we paying that writer the same as the guy who gets 80% of the page views? No. And we don't care what color they are.
My heart tells me yes.
We don't care what color they are. We don't care what race they are. We don't care what gender they are. We're like, this person makes money for us. They are more productive. They will be paid according to their productivity.
And I guess
I was going to say very quickly, the truth about women in general is that they get paid the exact same amount as men in a free market when things are truly equal, meaning the same experience, same amount of education, same amount of time. See, that's the other thing. There have been studies done on this, real studies, not the Hillary Clinton studies where she just makes up a number, doesn't understand how statistics works, and says, oh, women get paid 23% less. No, but do you know why that's nonsense? If there was really women doing the same work as men for 23% less, you and I, the first thing we do is start a company and hire only women because built into it, we have a 23% ROI that other companies hiring men do not have, okay?
But the bottom line, though, is that wasn't happening. I mean, that the point is his whole purpose in saying this, the president of the WNBPA stated, while concerned, they found out she's okay mentally and physically. I'm trying to find the quote here. Regarding this situation, that the reason she's stuck in Russia is based on gender, he goes, I mean, when is it not? And then he further said, you know, it's disappointing that the question of, you know, it being a gender issue is top of the mind now when it comes to this type of circumstance. But the reality is, you know, she's over there because of a gender issue, pay inequity. So he's saying she can't. He's making it sound like she has to go over there to put food on the table.
Wait a second. Well, did you say he said that? Did a man say that?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm wrongly assuming.
Okay. So, first of all, if it was a man that said that, haha, irony. But let's assume a woman said that. That is what I mean by a gender gap myth, William. They are pinning the fact that this woman went to Russia not because she's being discriminated against. It's the exact opposite. She had the freedom to go where her services were valued the most.
Right.
That was Russia. Her own desire, greed, if you want to use that word, whatever, meant that she also played in the U.S. What's her name? Sue Bird used to do that all the time, to the point
where... Right. Oh, that's right. I haven't heard that.
Where her U.S. team had to... I forget who she played for, but the U.S. team she played on in the WNBA almost had to put into her contract, you can only play so much overseas because by the time you come back to us, you're exhausted.
Yeah. See, actually, some teams actually encourage their players, but those are the ones that actually need work.
Yeah, and you're right. It might be a developmental situation for them, or just to get, like, say, bench players just need playing time or something, right? But to because you know what it is? It's a stupid statement based off a faulty understanding of economics. It's like one misinterpreted fact over, piled on top of the other. And it's intellectually lazy. It's a myth that I despise. As a data scientist, I despise this nonsense.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm sorry, John. I was excited. But she's a woman.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, so we'll take that back. But it's intellectually lazy because when you look at the statistics, and most people, for example, the oft-cited 23% does not take gradation into account. For example, in the medical field, most women who become doctors tend to be generalists. They're pediatricians, they're GPs, right? A lot of men, though, in the specialized fields, like thoracic surgeons, tend to be men. Those are higher-paying jobs. But when you hear the statistic, they're all doctors. They're all the same.
So
these are little inconsistencies, stupid mythologizing tricks, political tricks, to dupe you into thinking that there's a conscious gender gap. And it's nonsense. Few things get my blood boiling than this nonsense.
No, I can tell. I mean, you lost us about 10 minutes ago. But that
sorry.
Kept going, you know? I was like, whoa, look at him go. That passion has me hooked.
Send me a tweet.
No, but seriously, no, I'm kidding. But the point is you are in the minority, and you will never win that battle. But in this case,
I am. I thought I was white.
Yeah. But in this case, you do have the data to back it up. Yeah. That's why I think nobody really talks about this. And when to me, this is what the other side does is, you know, they demagogue you. They make you look like the nut job and conspiracy, but you have the data. But you're never going to win that argument.
No, because you know why? Because even opponents of gender equity almost concede that 23% number. It is the damnedest thing I've ever seen in my life. And it's the same thing as with when you hear about racial inequity in terms of pay gaps among different races.
Oh, no, we get that, John. It's but before we leave this, there what I call conspiracy theory. You know, I read an article and they just make it like a spy novel and she's so innocent. You know, it's kind of like they kind of want you to believe with no fact that she was held from being able to contact the consulate. Now, I wouldn't be shocked, but we have so much propaganda and social justice has been proven to have been caught lying a lot, you know. I'm like, where's the source, you know? So, yeah, I mean, it's just that's how the article reads. Everything's slanted, the innocent woman. And I'm like, my God, we got to get her out regardless. See, I have a belief, and this will be for any country. You take one of our guys, we have no chance but to go after you. Because the moment we don't, and I do mean that, you know, but there's ways to do that. You know, you don't go to war, but yeah, you got to return that guy or yeah, we are shutting the economic pipeline down. So my point being is they're trying to make her look the innocent, and nobody has come out and denied and said, and this bothers me because I'm like, this is the nuance of life. Nobody on our side has come out and said, no, that's not Brittany. You know, that's not her. She would never do that. No, there's no way in it. I haven't heard that once. And I kind of find that stunning in terms of how I look at life. To me, that's like a clear-cut sign that, well, maybe she had it or she likely had it. Because yeah. There are bigger ponds the Russians could have gone after than her.
Like, I agree with you. I think, look, do I think she likely had it? Yeah. And look, maybe she was unaware of the laws. I think that's pretty
stupid. No. 7 years? I mean, maybe she was, but what, 7 years she's been playing
something
there?
Something like that. See, yeah, I don't think ignorance is the issue here. I think she knew it. She probably thought she could get away with it. Or she thought it was no big deal. Maybe she thought if she got caught, she'd pay a fine or something, or they'd just confiscate the stuff. Who knows? But, like, listen, for example, if I take a trip to Thailand, I ain't bringing in any weed. They kill people for that.
Exactly. But right? I like your ignorance take.
Yeah.
Because that leads us straight into Cam Newton.
Oh, my God.
Before we get to Cam, let's hope for the best that Britney does get home soon.
We need
to upon a war. It's just that there's no words for that.
Yeah. I agree with you. Yeah, I, as a libertarian, nobody should go to jail for anything.
Oh, yeah. That shouldn't be illegal from the get-go. And, you know, with cannabis now, the medicinal purposes they are finding for it, I don't know if it works, you know, but don't poo-poo something because you just have assumptions.
Yeah,
but let's get to the ignorant one, as many who are being nice to him are saying, while others are just flat-out destroying him. Look, Cam Newton, to me, has never been one to think before he speaks. And that's a Latino. I had that terrible habit too. And I'm not defending him because it's wrong. It gets us in trouble. And this is what happened. So I'm going to set it up in terms of what happened, Big John. Then I have some questions for you. Because I think this is a type of discussion that it's so simple what happened. Let's talk about it and get into the not heated discussion. I think we'll probably be more alike here, you know. But here's some of the quotes that Cam Newton made on the $1 million. That's how it's spelled. $1 million worth of game podcast. Some quotes.
Yeah.
I had a perfect example of what a man was in my life by my father.
Okay.
Said, my parents have been together for 36, 37 years now, and it's a beautiful thing. I grew up in a three-parent household, my mom, my father, and my grandmother, and I knew what a woman was. Not a bad bitch, a woman. Or not a bad bitchy woman. I'm assuming it's bitchy.
Mm-hmm.
Cam Newton. Now, before we go into the other quotes, I get exactly what he's talking about. He's talking about the one-income household where the mother's job – see, this is when – we'll get into it later, but I'm like, people are assuming that it's a set way where the woman was a servant. And I can see that, but the woman's job of being a mother, raising the kid, and keeping that house tight was the culture back then. And the reason I don't take offense to it is – man, my mom took pride in that house, you know. It was their job. And as I'm older, and you with numbers will agree, there's a financial cost of that job.
Sure.
And it's not cheap. So I think that's what he's talking about, being the one dual income, having a mother there. You know, having a father who was a provider. They had their roles, you know. And even that didn't go well, it seemed like. What do you think of that quote?
Look,
what's he trying to say?
Listen, I don't know what he's trying to say exactly. I can guess. And again, here's my take. I wasn't offended because I never get offended at this stuff. Was I outraged? Absolutely not. I grew up in one of those households. My mother never has had – my mother's 82. She's never
had – that's right. She's a humanist.
Yeah, she's a humanist. She's never had a job outside the home.
And isn't a humanist the one that we see on TV shows, the guy who's killed 12 people and killed the guard while he was taken to prison? That's who your mom's defending?
No. Yeah, my mom thinks that no matter what kind of horrible killer you are, like, it's hilarious. She'll always turn to me and say, you know, I bet you he wasn't like that as a kid. I bet you if he had the right mother. You know, like, she has that outlook in life, you know.
So, but, in essence, it's fair to say your mom was Cam Newton's mom and your dad.
Basically, yeah. And so if you ask me, and I'm married to a professional woman, a scientist, who works and is outside the home and all that stuff, right?
And that's how you met her. You were both practicing your jobs, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Ask me to this day, what my ideal life is. And I'll go back to someone who stays at home, cooks for me, cleans for me, doesn't yell at me, doesn't nag me, you know, is kind of pretty, right? Like, I'll have all that stuff. Now, I can think that, and if you asked me my true, true, true opinion, that would be the woman opinion. Like, I don't want an idiot. But, yeah, what man, what person doesn't want someone to wait on them hand and foot, you know? And it's a natural human reaction. Now, having said that, that's why I don't take offense at it, and if that's what Cam Newton is looking in his life, as long as he's not beating anybody up, but he could go looking for the rest of his life.
Do you agree he was pretty much describing a patriarchal household?
Absolutely. And I would challenge anybody who has offense to that. It's like, what is it that you're actually offended at?
Yeah. I'll just say he got flack for it all. You know, there's some who even give him flack like that. Like, how dare you talk about that old, terrible, evil, vile
Well, that's what I was going to say. Now, ask me if I thought it was a good idea for him to say that. Yeah. And I'd say the answer is no. Yeah. You know, but
hold on. So here's the same quote. A bad bitch is a person who is just, you know, girl, I'm a bad bitch. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. I look the part, but I don't act the part, Newton said. Right. And there's a lot of women who are bad bitches. And I say bitch in a way not to degrade women, but just to go off the aesthetic of what they deem as a boss chick. Joe, what did he say there? Because I didn't quite understand the final line there.
I think I understood what he meant. I think. I guess. Who knows, right? But certainly the word bitch coming out of the mouth of a lot of men, like, for example, Patrice O'Neill used to do this a lot. I found myself at one point in my life doing the same thing when describing women, not calling them bitches.
Yeah, I had to say, chill out on your wife, man.
Exactly. Bitch, colloquially, especially in the urban settings, became a way of talking about a nagging woman. Typically your wife.
Okay.
Your wife or your girlfriend. You would say, oh, man, my bitch is really getting on me this week, you know. And it was almost like you didn't even think what the word meant. It's just something you said. And
so you're saying is you're saying that's how Cam Newton used it?
No. So I'm saying that when Cam Newton says these types of women who are bad bitches, first, I think he's mixing his metaphors. So the first instance where he goes, these women who call themselves bad bitches, he's referring to the self-description that some women use when they think they're in charge, right? So they'll be like, yeah, I'm the baddest bitch on the planet, right?
The mean girl.
I don't know if mean girl is the right word, but it's sort of like they've co-opted the word bitch as a source of empowerment.
Right, but so I think Cam's referring to the mean girl.
Well, I think that's where he mixed his metaphors, right? So I think initially he started off by talking about these women who have recaptured the word. The way Richard Pryor used to use the N-word up until a certain point, because he used it in a comedic sense to take away its insulting power. That's at least that was at the beginning of his career.
Is that what he said? I did not know that.
Yeah, well, listen, his first two albums had the word on the cover, right?
Well, you know, I was younger, so Richard Pryor.
Oh, sure. Like his first album or his two albums.
Yeah, I never heard that type, you know.
Oh, yeah, but I'll give you the title.
I wasn't a comedian type kid because we didn't, only when HBO started. But let's get the Cam here, though, real quick.
Yeah. So I think he mixed up the use of bitch.
He's just meaning that he's describing a mean girl. In essence, what he's
doing. I think a bossy girl might be a better description. Yeah. A bossy girl.
Someone... Nah, because when he's talking a bad bitch, that is not bossy. That is a mean woman in his eyes.
Maybe.
Okay. But I'm speculating. You're right. I can't sit there and say it, but that's what I think. Yeah, now his final quote for us. And people. Big John and I would never say this. If we were taught not to talk like this. But like John said, and I'm a sailor. I've seen this, heard it, whatever, yada, yada. But you don't say it about it. That's why Trump's comments never irked me. And I'm sure you defended him on that. Okay, his final quote. A woman for me is handling your own, but knowing how to cater to a man's needs. I think a lot of times when you get that aesthetic of like, you know what, John? It's not even worth finishing, except for this. when she's acting like the boss bitch, he comes back and says, you know, to put her in her place, he goes, no, baby, you can't cook. You don't know when to be quiet. you don't know how to allow a man to lead. And that's when I read, when I heard that, I'm like, I'm looking around like, boom, am I far enough away from Cam Newton so the lightning doesn't hit me too?
Right.
Because, I mean, in essence, he is wanting the patriarchal household.
It's obvious. That,
now, he was hammered for that. Should he have been hammered? I see it two ways. He told me to agree, disagree. Yeah, he should have been hammered for how he said all this. But me, I hammer him for being so ignorant to say it like that.
Right.
But two, what he's trying to describe is a household that actually statistically has been successful.
So I agree with your take. He was dumb to say it out loud, and especially in a non-comedic context. Like, again, Patrice O'Neill used to do this. He used the word bitch. He would talk about men being in charge and being better than women. But you got the idea that he was being funny, and you also knew from his relationships that all women adored him. Most women that knew him adored him because they viewed him as someone who said, yeah, I'm the man, I'll take the lead, and that's the way I want my relationships to be. But he wasn't like, you can't work, he wasn't, you can't go out, or anything like that.
He didn't say that. But at the end of the day, we can surmise his thought process of a nuclear family is a patriarchal family.
So
fairly attacked for how he said it by the media, by the social justice.
How he said it, yeah. Yeah. How he said it, it's fair enough. Certainly fair enough to get a response. Yes, absolutely.
Man, I tell you, Big John, I actually agree with that take. Well, it's pretty much the same take.
Yeah.
But there was another point I wanted to make. But, okay, that's it. Is our PC culture denigrating a man's ability to speak freely on life and propping women can say anything? So I believe women can say anything and get away with it. I mean, just like where society's gone sexually, et cetera. I'm not saying it's good or bad, but they can say anything. But if Cam has said that properly, I think he'd still get hammered. Do you think I'm right or wrong?
No, I think you're right. I think he could have used the most proper of language. And if he puts across that he thinks it's a man's world, as James Brown used to sing, he'd be in trouble. Yeah, there's no doubt. There's no.
I think Newton sees himself as a provider in that role.
He might be, yeah. Even if he viewed himself as like, hey, man, I want to be taken care of by my woman. That's my view of the perfect relationship. Okay, that's his favorite relationship.
And you know how he said it poorly. I'm like, yeah, we fill each other's needs up. You know, she tells me what to do. Like, you know, I love her, whatever. Okay, why are you doing that? She's my wife and I love her. You know, what I'm saying is, it's like, everything has to be seen from a certain way when the reality is you treat each other the same. You just have different jobs. Now, divorce is up. Kids, look at the generations. But anyway, we think Cam was an idiot for how he said it.
Right.
But we get what he said. And again, I will tell you from a statistical standpoint, those marriages tend to be more successful.
Well,
if
by successful you mean that they tend to stay married longer, you're probably right.
No, in terms of the kids. To give you an idea, married couples' kids, I forget the stat, and I'll make this and we'll go on to poor Mr. Gilbert Godfrey. But in the military, people don't realize there's a lot of gangs on the bases.
Oh, okay.
And the parents that are together the most, they don't travel as much, their kids come out better because there's no father figure. Statistically, it's shown. So that's what I mean by statistically. When there's two parents there, you're going to succeed much more. Well, but what you said is true, but that's not always good. You know?
Yeah, but statistically, what are we saying? I think we're saying the same thing because if you're married, odds are there's the father in the home. So – yeah, the longer there's two parents, the better off.
Well, that's what I mean, married, traditional, being married, man and woman. That's what he's referring to. All righty. So this is really your wheelhouse.
Yeah.
For the listeners out there, I don't know how deep he is, but I know he's run into a lot of people who have lived in the comedic circles. And I don't know how much you've researched it, but that when I mentioned since I've always known you, that has always come across as that's part of your world. It's not like you said, I did this. I just sensed it the way you talked about it, people who you come to know. And so I thought of you with Gilbert Gottfried. I saw that.
Yeah.
Rest in peace. And I texted you.
Yeah.
And so this is your wheelhouse. So I want to know everything here in the sense of what made him unique. Because as I told you off camera, he wasn't that he was famous. Most people wouldn't know him in terms of you talked about him, but then they saw his face, or if you mentioned the thing they did, oh yeah, I know that guy. He's one of those type of actors. Yeah, he knew everybody in the industry. So first of all, how old was he? And specifically, what did he do?
Yeah, he was 67 when he passed away this morning. Gilbert Gottfried was a comedian. More than likely, you've heard his voice. He had a very screechy, annoying, Jewish voice. Hey, lady, almost like Jerry Lewis.
Very stereotypical Jewish in a way.
Yes, but turned up 10 to 10.
Exactly.
Always loud and everything. People might remember him if you were a Howard Stern fan. He used to be a guest all the time on Howard Stern in the beginning years, especially. He always used to sit in and do the news. He was the voice of the parrot in Aladdin.
That was international fame. Well, no, that's only American because they dub him over differently.
But it was from what I read, they created that role only to get him in it.
Wow.
He was the voice of the Aflac doc. Aflac. That was
to me. That's his most memorable role. Yeah. He's not known for having voices until he got in trouble.
And like you said, William, he was very big if you watched the Comedy Central roasts. He was always the guy roasting the other celebrities. And possibly one of the greatest tellings of one of the worst jokes ever under the worst circumstances. The 9/11, right after 9/11 in New York, having lived here and actually being at the 9/11 site when it happened, people don't realize what happened to the city. It was not only that you had obviously the loss of life and everything, but the people here they were walking around like zombies. They didn't know how to laugh anymore. Nothing was funny. Everything was offensive. People were constantly crying.
And you were struck at the heart. You were struck in the heart unexpectedly. And let's be honest. You New York Cityers are an arrogant bunch, and I don't say that in a negative or positive way. I got relatives there, and to have that type of mentality, that self esteem as a city, as a culture, because you may be white, black, you're gonna have your identity battles that the meal portrays, but at the end of the day, what's one thing y'all always agree on? I'm a damn New Yorker. That's why that happened. I just think psychologically that's a great point you bring up.
And people were walking around like, oh man. So there was nothing going on in the comedy clubs. There was nothing going on in the nightclubs. So Comedy Central put together a roast for Hugh Hefner. They flew him out.
Fire's Club.
Yeah, he agreed to it. And all the proceeds were going to go to the 9/11 relief funds and all that. So the comedy, and you could tell if you watch that, the audience was very on edge. Like they would politely giggle or something, but nobody was really laughing. So Gilbert Gottfried got up and tried to do a joke where he said, I was on my way to California, but I have a connecting flight at the World Trade Center. Does anybody know if I'm going to make it on time or something like that? I heard it might be canceled. Oh my God, the boos that rained down on him. People were in the audience yelling, not too soon, too soon, you know.
Like, dude, too soon.
Yeah, and that's the other thing about Gilbert. Never afraid. Watch his roast of Donald Trump. Not afraid to say anything to anybody. He was fearless. I love that.
That's why he did a 9/11 joke.
He did that, like, wait, hey, I have a connecting flight at the World Trade Center. Literally people saying, too soon, no jokes. And you could see he was flustered. And this is in the movie The Aristocrat. So all of a sudden, he goes from booze, and without missing a beat, he goes, a man, a woman, and their family walk into a talent agent's office. And if you know anything about comedy, he was beginning to tell the filthiest jokes ever written, The Aristocrat's joke, okay? And this joke, its whole purpose is, this is what one comic says to another comic. It's almost never said out loud in front of an audience. It's always performed for other comedians. And almost like the inside joke is, how long can you keep cursing and being filthy without repeating yourself?
And then the punchline is, exercise.
Yeah. And the punchline is always, what do you call this horrible act? And the father leans back and goes, the aristocrats, you know, and that. So the joke itself is actually a shitty joke, but the process is what comics love. Gilbert Gottfried.
Yeah, you know what? Gilbert Gottfried was funny, but you know what you said about it's about the process.
Yeah.
There's some comedians who passed away, and I'm like, I never heard of him. But then you talk to their friends, and he's the greatest gift that just was never discovered. And then you listen to them, and like, yeah, you're stuck in that process, and you're not funny. You know, but yet his peers would look at me like I'm a stupid moron because you just don't get that humor.
Yeah, people loved him. Look.
Norman Godfrey was a little of both, or do you think he was just literally funny all the time?
I don't call him a genius because, to me, a genius is being funny while also making you think.
Oh, yeah. George Carlin,
Richard Pryor, Patrice O'Neill, Norm MacDonald to some extent. But I put Gilbert at that tier right below it because he was always trying to make people laugh. Nothing was off limits. I mean, nothing. He was a Jew, obviously. And he was roasting Hasselhoff, one of my favorite jokes that almost no one remembers.
And he goes,
David Hasselhoff, he goes, I always read that you sold tremendous numbers of records in Germany. But like most numbers coming out of Germany, they're probably overinflated and might even be a hoax. I died laughing at that. Almost nobody in the audience did. And if you don't get the
reference, was he in Germany?
Hasselhoff was big in Germany.
No. I mean, where did he do the joke?
Oh, it was here somewhere. It was for Comedy Central. Yeah. But the funny part is, almost nobody got it. And if you don't get the references, he was making fun of Holocaust deniers who keep saying it wasn't 6 million Jews and it was more like 600 and it probably wasn't even 600. Like, you have those idiots, right? And he made fun of them while still ragging on Hasselhoff and never broke. And you could see. Some people were like, was that funny? You know, what's he talking about? And he was always like that. So I give him credit. The roast of Donald Trump, he literally referred to Melania as an Eastern Bloc whore to Trump's face to make a joke.
You know, that's just how the culture was. That goes back to before the Dean, like Don Rickles. I mean, even today's social justice warriors know who Don Rickles is because they've been pissed at him when he was a 90-year-old man still busting out those jokes.
Yeah.
But
that's a good way maybe as a comparison to the old school. Gilbert Gottfried and Don Rickles were both insult comics and Gilbert was like, Don Rickles was not filthy. He never cursed almost. He would always make jokes, but it would be, I love the blacks. I love the blacks, you know.
Oh, and the way he say the blacks, you know.
The blacks.
Like, I'm cringe now. Just out of, like,
he goes, ladies and gentlemen, Will Chamberlain.
Those were some of the Dean Martin roasts. And they would look at him, and I'm like, you know what, John? As a final, I just would love to be in the head. What are you thinking right now with Don Rickles?
Oh, wow. They all loved him. Like, I remember the one where he made fun of Mr. T at a roast, and I thought Mr. T might kill him, because I had bought into the hype of Mr. T. And he said something, he goes, as Mr. T likes to say, who did? You know, and he would, like, make stupid jokes like that. And go,
yeah, but what they say, I mean, I agree with you, because it seems like he was one of those, he was in the era where they were all beloved, they all worked hard to get there, they wanted to.
Yeah, so you're right, there was a certain cachet to that, and I think it's the same thing with Gilbert Gottfried. Most comedians, if you looked at the tweets from comedians, they all loved him. There was, maybe you'd find one or two who were stuck up and didn't like him. Most of them considered it a badge of honor to be roasted by Gilbert Gottfried.
Right. And that was in the Friars Room, remember?
Yes.
Back in the day, it was an honor to be roasted. Yeah.
I put Gilbert on that level, where he made me laugh almost every time. Some of his things were very witty, but I don't call him a genius because I don't think he had that social relevance that the geniuses have.
Right. But what about somebody like Jerry Lewis then? I mean...
Oh, Jerry Lewis is an idiot. I have no love for Jerry Lewis.
You don't think he was funny at all?
No.
He pulled it off and in there. I understand. I mean, don't tell that to a Frenchman.
Yeah. Well,
David Hasselhoff is the Germans. Yeah.
The Germans, Jerry Lewis. Yes, you're absolutely right. But Jerry Lewis is a great point because he was very successful. Like, I can never take away success with Dean Martin.
And that's my whole point is he's an idiot. I'm like, yeah, that idiot. It wasn't just the movies. And, right. It was his act on the road, which is what got him into the movies. Yeah. But then he succeeded. I think he did better than in Hollywood than Dean Martin after they broke up. Dean Martin may have had a longer career crooning. Who knows?
Yeah, and like it was a different era. And I don't think – but see, I'm also referring to stand-ups, which is a different beast than comedic actors, than sketch actors, than improv actors. Like, I look at stand-ups with reverence because I view them as often being the leaders of social change. And they're the ones who hold us up to a light. So Lenny Bruce is the perfect example, right? Lenny Bruce wasn't really all that funny. If you listen to his material now, he really wasn't all that funny.
But I heard his material when I was a kid, and I didn't get it because I was too young, but it wasn't funny.
It wasn't funny. I don't think he was very funny, but he was very important because of the way he used language. Richard Pryor is the perfect example of someone who was controversial, like we were talking about it before.
Oh, he's funny, though.
His first album, or one of his first albums, was called This Is Crazy.
Dude, and why do you have to say that word?
Because I'm quoting what was on his. He put it on his, right?
I just want to clarify for the audience. That's it. Yeah.
Don't worry. Yeah. It probably got beeped out, William. But what I'm trying to say is what I'm trying to say is that he used that word for a reason, and it wasn't to either degrade or to get a cheap laugh.
Right.
He used it to show how ridiculous that word was when it was used in anger. And he took that power away. So Gilbert Gottfried, in the same way, tried to do that by making fun of everything. Why did he get fired from his Affleck gig? By the way, the easiest money he ever made. He was getting paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to go Affleck, Affleck.
And is there not one, if in every single American who has seen that commercial anywhere in the world, what do we do when we see that commercial? We try to imitate the Beck voice.
There you go. I didn't think of that.
Something simple, but that was Godfrey's voice. You know, it's kind of funny. We don't even realize the magic behind what we're looking at.
And by the way, why did he get fired? Do you remember the
reason? He got fired because Japan is where Affleck, I guess, has his home away from home cottages. Because I guess like 70% of their business
is in Japan. Right.
And I didn't know that. So, but in his defense,
no, but what did he do?
I don't think he knew that.
He knew it. Do you know why he got fired? Tell the people. Do you remember?
Oh, he got fired because he made a joke.
He tweeted a joke about
some Japanese jokes.
Something about like beachfront.
Oh,
property.
That's what it was. The earthquake had just happened.
No, it was the tsunami. It was the tsunami.
Yeah, the tsunami. The sun, and it triggered earthquakes, but more importantly, it triggered Fukushima to fail. You know, so it was like. Yeah. It's one of those things where like, dude, this is too soon. Okay, I'm sorry. No, you don't get it. We got to fire you over this.
FYI, he never apologized, which is another thing I loved about him.
If he didn't know, it's like there's an honest mistake. I mean, I guess you could apologize. Yeah, I'm sorry because I didn't realize. Versus, I'm not apologizing for what I said. I just apologize for something I offended. Yeah,
Meaning, it's not worth
my bother. Knock yourself out if you want to hear my apology.
By the way, if you want to find out more about him, he had a podcast that he was doing right up until he died called Gilbert Gottfried's Colossal Amazing Colossal Podcast.
Who was his first guest?
Oh, man. I don't know. That's a good trivia question. I don't know.
Dick?
Huh? I really don't know. Who?
Dick Cavett.
Dick Cavett makes sense.
And for most people don't know, but that is kind of like, that's like Cinderella, the poor person, dirtbag, no elite would ever be seen with. You know, that's Gottfried.
Yeah.
Dick Cavett is the man who interviews all those elite, super rich, wealthy, powerful, famous. And
well, who was it that got that?
Dick Cavett.
People forget, Dick Cavett is the one who got the famous Richard Nixon episode.
Where
he got Nixon to admit it's not illegal if the president does
it. Dick Cavett, for him to have a podcast and open up with Dick Cavett speaks volumes as to his circles out there of friends.
Well, the respect
for Dick Cavett to say, yeah, I think your podcast, you idiot comedian. I mean, that's how you would think of it. Because it's his agent saying, you got to do that, Dick. But that's more like Dick.
It was funny because I went to see him in Caroline's about 6-7 months ago. He came on the bill, and I said, oh, I got to go see him because I had never seen him live. And I went to see him, and I remember thinking it wasn't his strongest show because he wasn't as energetic as he usually is.
Maybe tired.
And now you can't help but thinking like,
when was this?
About 6-7 months ago.
Oh, that's exactly what it was. Because they said this was a – in fact, we should have opened up with that. They have a nice little quote here about him.
Myotonic dystrophy type 2. It's a rare disease. It affects the heart.
Right. And it gives you muscle weakness, pain, and stiffness. And it sounds like it's not really serious for most, but – if it lasts longer than it should or whatever, it can trigger all these things in it, yeah. Including cardiac arrest. And it's just a sad case because it's not the myotonic dystrophy type 2, that's how you say it, that killed him. It's the ventricular tachycardia.
Yeah.
But that's triggered by the previous thing I said.
Yeah, that's the arrhythmia that's caused the thing. Yeah. But,
so that makes sense, though, with the symptoms. So, yeah, you know. So we know it's Aflac duct. We know he lost that because he pissed the Japanese off.
Yeah, and I mean, he was in a lot of other bit roles. He was in Beverly Hills.
Right, but I wanted to ask you, what do you know about him before we end this? Is what do you know about his SNL? Look, SNL, nobody knows who the main members were except for the most main ones. Yeah. But that was not a nice experience for him, was it?
No, he didn't even last the season. So – What's interesting is SNL, people view it as this, oh my God, because they're thinking of the John Belushi days.
Right. Or the Eddie Murphy days.
Or the Eddie Murphy days, right. But Saturday Night Live almost has a tradition of turning away talented comedians because they are so tied up in politics and backstabbing. Jim Brewer, Gilbert Gottfried, Sarah Silverman, Louis C.K., Larry David, the guy who wrote Seinfeld and has Curb Your Enthusiasm. He was a writer and bit player there for a while. So there was all these guys that later went on to do great things, but they just it was the attempt to put a corporate structure on these loose cannons, and it just never worked.
You know, I always got the impression, John, it was more to do with politics. Sure. Like they had the jockey to see who's and then obviously when somebody got a little famous, they got more of their stuff in.
Well, why did Norm MacDonald get fired? The famous story. Because he made fun of OJ. He made fun of OJ nonstop.
Well, that's the politics.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Like, think about this. They told him, Dick Ebersole, who ran NBC, said, OJ is a good personal friend of mine. Don't make fun of him. Just ignore the subject, all right? And every Saturday night, you would tune in. I would tune in just for this. On News Update, Norm MacDonald would come on and talk about OJ the murderer. OJ the killer.
Tim Meadows has the classic. He's playing OJ, and he's back. It's great to be back, Mom. Great to be back, whatever. So then he's diagramming the play. You know, as he's diagramming, you know, you're listening, but you're watching what he's writing. He's writing, I did it. Tim Meadows pulled it off so well.
But that was an approved skit.
Yeah. That was a skit that went live.
Norm MacDonald got fired because Dick Ebersole finally said, I've had enough. And he told them, you're not funny anymore. And he had Lorne Michaels. Now, the funny thing is, Norm MacDonald, of course, didn't care because he was like Gilbert Gottfried. He was from that generation that money really wasn't that important to them. It was the ability to be honest. So Gilbert Gottfried probably fell into that thing where they were like, okay, you got to make ha-ha jokes and funny jokes and not offend anybody and all that stuff.
I think, John, he comes across as this nice guy. Nobody's ever said me thing. That's the type of scenario. If you're not strong to stand up, hey, this is funny for yourself, or if you're intimidated because some of these are comics you admired, you know, it's easy to be pushed to the side, you know. But I don't think they tried the corporate structure. That's why they brought Lorne back. You know, because Lorne left and Lorne didn't care about the structure as long as they showed up to work, you know.
There were people
afterwards he stopped working with that he wanted to do movies with because they couldn't not show up, you know, whether sober or not drugged out. So, I mean, wasn't kind of his line, or like what you said. What I'm saying is, I think he's a reformed alcoholic. I could be wrong.
I don't know, but, you know, a lot of comedians – who went through SNL, they don't have nice things to say about him.
Oh, yeah, because, dude, it's Lorne against them. Lorne is the management they hate because he's the one who's actually holding them back. See, when Lorne came back, he had final say. And I'm not defending SNL. I haven't really enjoyed it since the first 5 years. And then I've enjoyed sessions of years. Like, I loathe Will Ferrell's politics. And it was such a stupid skit, but him and Sherry O'Terry doing the cheerleading. You know, just so there's been periods. But since they left, I don't even bother.
Yeah. I don't watch it now either. If something's funny and it goes viral on the internet, but I haven't tuned into Saturday Night Live, I'm not exaggerating, maybe 20 years.
Holy man, that hasn't been that long for me. But any final words on a man you actually sounded to me when we talked to
you? I love Gilbert Gottfried. Rest in peace. That's all I have to say. It's he died young, 67. It's not that old for today's lifespan. So, R.I.P. Gilbert.
Yeah, and may he rest in peace. Yeah. And John, you know, it's been a little long show. Longer, we got into some of the heated discussions. Who think that Cam Newton will get us so hot? It must be that church lady outfit he wears. That was one of the Twitter responses. I look for a man who doesn't dress up like he's going to, like my mom going to Sunday church.
That's a good one.
Yeah. But it's a great show as always, John. People, do not forget to visit us at www.sportsgrumblings.com and please share. Also, it's great to have you. It's great to be on with you, John. And until next time, y'all have a good night.
Good night, Senor Pilar.
Good night, big girthy John.